We are going to cover 25 verses tonight of the 7th chapter of the book of Judges. This is part 6 of our study. This is the second half, not half, it's the second third of our look at Gideon. Last week we saw Gideon called, and we dealt just with chapter 6, and we just talked about God coming down to the oak tree in Ophrah. The angel of the Lord appeared to him there. Whether you believe that to be Christ or an angel, doesn't matter. I know what it really was. You don't have to agree with me. I think it is the Lord. I think it is a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. I don't make that a standard of fellowship, but the angel of the Lord touched the sacrifice and was consumed, and only God is worthy of receiving sacrifice. And I also believe it was the Lord that appeared to Abraham on the plain of Mamre on his way with two angels to Sodom and Gomorrah. So I don't have a problem with Christ showing up in another form prior to his birth, because he came as a human in his birth. And so anyways, that's where I am on that. Whether you're with me or not doesn't matter. We're going to look this time not at Gideon called, but Gideon the commander. Last time he was hiding under a tree in a wine press. He was basically throwing wheat up in the air, hoping the wind would blow it away in a place where the wind don't blow, behind a wine press. And he was humbled. He obeyed God at night for fear of his father's household and the community. But here in this text, we're going to see him as commander. He's going to become a great military leader. Next week, Lord willing, we'll look at chapter 8, and we'll see Gideon as chief. We're going to see some of his policy as judge over Israel. So, I want us to look and read this. Instead of me reading all 25 verses, then backing up and reading each passage, I want us to deal with these three divisions in the text. When we look at him as commander, there's three things that take place in this chapter. For me, it naturally breaks down this way. Verses 1 through 8, reducing the army. Verses 9 through 15, reassuring their ability. And then verses 16 through 25, routing their adversaries. So let's just look at the first 8 verses. I'll read them. Then we'll look at the divisions under these 8 verses here in chapter 7. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were north of them on the hill of Moreh, in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hath saved me. Mine own hand hath saved me. Therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from the Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And whosoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. And he brought down the people unto the water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, every one that lappeth the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped, I will save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people of every man into his own place. So the people took victuals in their hand and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man into his tent, and he retained those 300 men, and the host of the Midianite was beneath him in the valley. Now, in these first 8 verses, God is reducing the army. And if you notice, in the first 3 verses, he divides them by the fearful. And then in verses 4-8, he divides them by their form, what they do. Let's first of all deal with dividing those that are fearful, or dividing them by fear. Jerubbaal, which is Gideon, verse 1. Now, why did they call him Jerubbaal? Do you remember? He tore down the altar and the people wanted to kill him. And his dad said, look, if Baal is God, let Baal contend with him. So the people of the town called his name, Baal will contend. Baal will deal with you. Well, they're fixing to find out that Baal is not going to deal with Gideon, but actually God, the one true God, is going to deal with Gideon and use Gideon and a band of 300 men to save all of Israel. So this is now going to become, because of the name they give him, this is now going to become a definitive statement on who the one true God is. Okay? Verse 2 says, the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hath saved me, my own hand hath saved me. When we look at that text, you need to be reminded that God wants the glory. God always wants the glory, and he don't share his glory with anybody else. And he will not, now here's the application lesson of verse 2. God will not share his glory with anyone else. So, how do we account for a preacher that gets up and says, my preaching brought 300 people to salvation? You need to have me preach at your church because everywhere I preach, people get saved. He needs to repent. You're right, Bob. Why? Because God is not going to let anybody do his bidding who's not going to glorify and honor him. So anytime we have a preacher boasting in the numbers of people that he has attending or he has saved or whatever, if he's bragging about his people, he's definitely not glorifying God in that. Therefore, you can rest assured that preacher is not God's choice. Now, apply that to all the local preachers that brag about how many people come to their church because of their great programs and their great events that they have. Now, deduct from that where God's at. He ain't there. God's not going to work that way. God doesn't need you. God didn't need 32,000 people to beat the Midianites. He says, if you get victory, you know what they're going to say? We did it, we did it, we did it. The whole purpose of this is for God to bring them to the point where they recognize they need him. So everybody see why we're reducing the army? Okay, verse 3. Now therefore, go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from the Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. He said, anybody that don't really want to go to war, is really kind of timid and afraid, having second thoughts, you can go home. Now, let's be honest here. If he had went into battle with 22,000 that didn't want to be there, how effective would he have been? He wouldn't have been. These people wouldn't have fought. They would have fled. So he says, anybody that wants to go home can go home. And I'm sure when Gideon utters these words, I'm sure he's expecting maybe a couple thousand people to leave. Because God's on his side. And remember, if God's on your side, you're going to have a lot of people, right? All these churches that are big are claiming it's because of God. Man, y'all get quiet as crickets. Why do we praise God for the number of people when God obviously doesn't need a number of people to accomplish his purpose? Here's where he's going. He says anybody who wants to go home can go home. You know what he invited them to do? Exercise their own free will. What happens when you tell people to exercise their free will in their service to God? They don't serve him. They don't. Do you want to voluntarily go to war and rescue Israel from the Midianites who outnumber us? Many people believed that the Midianites at this time numbered, this band of Midianites that they're killing, many of the scholars reading ancient writings would say the Midianite raiders would number somewhere between 110,000 and 150,000 people. No, it was hand-to-hand combat. Now, 32,000 doesn't seem like quite the army when you're going up against 150,000. You're outnumbered 5-1. And this is a weaponized army. Your army has pitchforks and shovels and axes, and they have swords and chariots and camels. So, yeah. Anybody afraid? Free will. Anybody who doesn't want to go, don't have to. When it comes to serving God, if you give the world the opportunity, they will all go home. You know who will stay? Those whom God has given the call to stay to. So, how many of this army of 32,000 go home? 22,000. Over two-thirds leave. Can you imagine the shock on Gideon's face? He's outnumbered 5-1. God says, I can't work with this. Too big of an army. You'll take the credit for yourself. Let's cut this army down by over two-thirds. So Gideon's now got his 10,000 men. I mean, that's enough that maybe you could, you know, make an assault. Maybe you could do a picket's charge, you know, and break through the lines with 10,000 men. Now the Lord doesn't divide them by the fearful. Now He divides them by form. And this is a portion of Scripture I've known since I was a child, but never understood. Okay? So I want us to look at verses 4 through 8, and I want to see God dividing the armies of Israel, the army of Gideon, by their form. Notice what He says. Let's read a little verse, and then we'll discuss it. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go with thee. Now, God says, you bring them down to the water, and I'm going to try them for you. God says, I'm going to pick your army. He doesn't let Gideon pick his army. If Gideon picked his army, he'd pick the big, tall guys that were strong, that had the sharpest pitchforks. He would pick an army that would make sense to him. And he probably wouldn't call anybody. But God says, bring them down to the river and I'm going to divide them. And then once I divide them, notice what God says. After I've divided them, I'm going to tell you who we're going to keep and who we're going to let go. So He brings them down to the water. Verse 5. Brought them down into the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth the water to his tongue, with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shall thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down upon his knees to drink. So, I didn't understand this. Dogs stick their mouth down to the water and drink. Right? Well, everybody that did that didn't go, no. Everybody that lapped the water with their hand to their mouth like a dog does with his tongue. If you ever watched a dog drink? As a kid, I watched a dog drink, and then I would go in there and get a bowl of water, and I would stick my tongue in the water. And I'm like, I would die of thirst. I'm not getting any water. So I went back and I watched the dog drink again, but the dog's tongue is shaped different than mine. The dog's tongue is long and flat, and the dog's tongue actually goes into the water and makes a cup and brings the cup of water back into the dog's mouth. And he's doing it so fast, I'm licking the water like a lollipop, and I'm dying of thirst here. I can't drink like this. But if you use your hand to your mouth to scoop the water, to get your drink, like a dog laps water to his mouth in the cup of his tongue, you're using the cup of your hand. If you're doing that, I want you to go on this side. If you get down on your knees and you put your face in the water and drink, I want you to go over on this side. So it becomes pretty obvious to Gideon real quick, out of 10,000 men, only 300 are over here in the hand lapping side. 9,700 are over here. So Gideon's probably looking around going, okay, we got rid of those 300 you didn't want. Glad we weeded out those 300 that I couldn't spot. I'm glad you're here, God. You found those weak links in our group. Verse 7. The Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you and deliver the Midianites into thine hand and let all the other people go every man into his tent. Now, just stop for a moment. The reason I learned this passage early is because when I was a child, my dad took me hunting. I mean, I was probably 5 or 6 years old. And we were walking down along vast grass and some creek bottoms. And there was a little stream running over some rocks that ran down and into the creek. And Dad said, are you thirsty? And I said, yeah. He said, well, get you a drink out of that little stream there. He said, I drank out of that little stream when I was a kid. That little stream runs all year. It comes out of the ground. It's like a well. So my dad leaned over like the 300 and got him a handful of water and took a couple drinks of it. And I saw my dad do that, so I dipped my little 5-year-old hand down in the water. But when I got it up, the water went through my hands and I couldn't. So I give up and I got down on my face and I put my hands on the rocks and I stuck my lips down in that water and I drank like the 9,700. You know what my dad said? You should never drink that way while you're hunting. I said, why not? He said, you can't tell if a deer comes up. A deer might run up on you and you're laid out on the ground, your gun's over here. He said, like Gideon's men, you got to scoop that water to your mouth. That way you can be looking for the enemy. These guys were ready. They were trained soldiers. Listen to me. That entire story is made up. God wasn't looking for somebody that was looking for the enemy. Nowhere in Scripture is that found that God wants somebody with some special awareness. Have all of you read this story before? Did these soldiers need to be especially aware and attuned to ninja tap attacks in the wilderness? Or did they just need to walk out and go, ta-da, ta-da, sword of the Lord Gideon, and hold their torch up? And God did all. God's not looking for ninjas. He's not looking for MMA fighters. He's not looking for Navy SEALs. God is just finding a way, and God knows who these people are, and God knows who's going to drink how. God has just used simply their common nature to divide off 300 out of an original 32,000. God doesn't need any special ability. These guys weren't military trained because they drank with their hand like my dad was teaching me to do. This was just the common form. So the 9,700 left, and the 300 took from them victuals, that's King James for food, stuff to eat in their hands, and they took all the trumpets they had for some unknown reason. It would appear to me that Gideon has a little more insight than God's writing down in the book. They took all the trumpets they had, and he sent the rest of Israel away, every man into his tent, and there remained 300 men, and the host of Midian was beneath them in the valley. So they're on a mountain. They're on the north side. The Midianites are on the south side. They had 32,000 men. They went down to 10,000 men, and the same day they went down to 300 men. The enemy's right on the other side of the mountain. At any given time, the Midianites can say, let's go around there and knock off this rebel army on the other side of the mountain. That's where we are. God's whittled the army. Is there any questions about how God divided the army up? Everybody understand? They didn't get down and lick the water like a dog. They just used their hand to do what a dog's tongue does for a dog. Just paddle scooped it into their mouth. They wasn't doing that because they were military grade. They were just doing that by nature, by my normal practice, just their normal form. God could have said anybody that combs the hair to the left goes. Anybody that combs the hair to the right stays. God's doing the choosing here, and it's not by skill level. If you're still trying to say, like my dad told me, that this was by skill level, God doesn't need your skills. Gideon had no skills. Remember his argument last week? My family is the least in the tribe of Manasseh, and I'm the least in my family. God ain't looking for skillful. God's looking for a group so small that nobody could win but God. That's the reducing of the army. Now, verses 9 through 15, he's going to reassure their ability. Remember Gideon? I'm going to serve the Lord because I saw him and he didn't kill me. People don't think they're going to die if they saw an angel. People think they're going to die after they've seen God. And God comes to Gideon and says, Gideon, I'm not going to kill you, but here's what I want you to do. Tear down the idols. He tears down the idols. He gets away with it. His father defends him. The people back off and leave him alone. And then he says, all right, the Midianites are here. It's time to go to war. And for two nights, he puts fleece out and gets his answer two times. If there's ever a time to be second-guessing God, it wasn't when you had 32,000 men. It was when you had 300 men. But he learned his lesson by fleecing God. Remember the second time, Lord, don't be angry with me. Let me ask you one more time. He doesn't ask. Let's look at verses 9 through 15. It came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it unto thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, go thou with Purah, thy servant, down unto the host, and thou shalt hear what they say. And afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Purah, his servant, unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers for a multitude, and their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for a multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it, and it fell, overturned it, and the tent lay along. And the fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, a man of Israel, for into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream, the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord hath delivered it into your hand, the host of Midian. All right. Break down that passage there, 9 through 15. First thing I want you to notice, instead of Gideon asking God for a sign, God initiates this conversation. You don't have to put the fleece out with God. God already knows how you feel. You can just tell God, hey, I'm scared slapped to death. God will reassure you if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Notice what it says, and it came to pass the same night. This is the night they were down to 300. Now, I bet the 300 probably had some questions themselves. We came here as part of 32. We were part of the 10,000 that said, we're not leaving. Now, you sent 9,700 away, and it's just us three. What's your plans? All we have are 300 trumpets, 300 pots full of food, 300 torches. What are we doing here? Gideon probably is going to the Lord in prayer. What shall I do here? So it is God that intercedes and says, arise, get thee down to the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. God tells him he can attack right now. This battle carries on into the next morning, into the end of the next day, because they do not attack till 10 o'clock. God's telling him he can attack right now at sundown. I think if they had attacked right now at sundown, the whole thing would have been over by daylight. But he said, if you're afraid, take somebody with you. It's God's idea. Now God's going to give him the instruction. But if thou fear to go down, go with Purah, thy servant, down to the host. Thou shalt hear what they say, and afterwards shall thine hand be strengthened to go down unto the host. And they went, and then went he down with Purah, his servant, into the outside of the armed men that were in the host. Okay. I want you to look at what God says in verse 11. He says, I want you to go down there and you're going to hear what they say. And after you hear what they say, you're going to be strengthened to kill them. God is telling him what's going to be preached, and he's telling them the outcome of the preaching. I use the word preaching instead of conversation, just so you understand that God is also sovereign over sermons. who hears them, what they hear from them, and how they feel after them. If God can tell Gideon, you're going to go down and you're going to hear a conversation between a few soldiers, now how does he know where Gideon's going to go? He just said, go down to the army. Go down there and stand next to the outpost where the guards are. And listen to what the guards are saying. Was there one way in and one way out of a host of 150,000 people? No. There were guards stationed everywhere. But God ensured that where Gideon ended up, he heard a message that was foreordained. And he told Gideon, you're going to hear this. And here's how it's going to make you respond. How can God tell a person what they're going to hear and how they're going to respond before they ever hear it? Because he's God. People have all kinds of problems with God being God because they want to be God. Yeah, and the heathen did the preaching off a heavenly vision about bread rolling downhill. God's idea is for Gideon to be reinsured. God's instruction for reassurance is that you go down and you listen. So he's telling Gideon, you've got to sneak up within earshot. I don't know about you. And I don't want to sneak up with an earshot of an army of 150,000 people. That's a little too close. Can we telescope it? Can we look from a distance? Can you spell it out in the stars? Do I really have to get within earshot of men talking to get the information? That's what God gives you. God may reassure you, but listen, that don't mean it's going to be easy and fall in your lap. It's still going to require faith and obedience. God's instruction. God's intervention. Now God is going to deal with somebody other than Gideon and these 32,000 men. God's now going to show Gideon that he's already, for some time, been dealing and intervening in the lives of the enemy, even though Gideon hasn't engaged them yet. Look with me at verses 12 through 14. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers for a multitude. Grasshoppers was a locust, and locusts came in swarms. And if locusts came into your area, they ate everything, like army worms. We're not familiar with locusts, but you may be familiar with army worms. Army worms will go across somebody's yard and eat it to bare dirt. Army worms will go through a soybean field and eat it to stubs sticking out of the ground. They will wipe out corn, hay fields, anything. Locusts do the same thing. And when they say they're a multitude, it's saying that these people were just covering the ground. It says that their camels were without number. Is the sand by the seaside for a multitude. Not everybody rode a camel. They had oxes. They had carts. They had men that walked on foot. They had servants themselves. They had slews of prisoners with them. They had a ton of people. If you couldn't count all the camels, then you ain't going to come close to counting all the people. And Gideon's going to tiptoe up within this big crowd and see if he can hear what they're saying. Verse 13, and when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told the dream unto his fellow. And he said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian and came unto a tent and smote it that it fell and overturned it, and the tent lay flat. You know, dreams don't ever make sense, do they? They don't. I don't know. Maybe your dreams do. Maybe your dreams, you know exactly. But in mine, they don't. I'm driving a tank in a war, and I look down at my tank, and it's Hunter's Orange. I'm like, no, I want somebody else's tank. I don't want to drive this one in war. I've never driven a tank. I don't know what kind of, what's this dream of? None of it makes sense. Here's the guy that goes, I got this weird dream. A cake of barley bread. Picture a round loaf of bread. He says it's tumbling down a hill and it rolls into our camp and it hits a tent and it just levels the tent so that it caves in on itself and crushes everybody underneath it so that when it rolls over it, it's just flattened out. Ain't that a weird dream? Look at this other fellow's response. And his fellow, because when you're on guard duty, two of you. That way if one of you gets shot, the other one can run back and say, there's somebody out there. And his fellow answered and said, "This is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host." Since when did Gideon become a worldwide famous guy? Since when was Gideon known for his sword? Israel don't have any swords. Their arsenal is depleted. Israel's been under oppression of the Midianites for 7 years. If there were swords left, they would have already used them. When's Gideon become known as a sword swinger? This is essentially a guy that has never picked up a gun who's now known by his enemies as a gunfighter. That's the equivalent. It's like he's Bob Mundin from the world's greatest shot. The guy that can split a playing card in half with a pistol in like 0.3 seconds. How does Gideon get this reputation? This is before the internet. It was just this week that he was even known in his town as the guy that tore down the altars and tore down the groves to Asherah and destroyed the temple to Baal. News can't travel that fast. Maybe they heard that somebody over there was trying to muster up an army to fight the Midianites. But the Midianites number near 150,000, estimated. Are they worried about an army of pitchfork soldiers coming off the farm? No. How did this man immediately go, "Well, I know what this stream's talking about"? He knows not only who Gideon is, but he knows who his dad is. He knows he's a sword swinger and a man of Israel. He's not a man of Israel. He told the angel of the Lord he wasn't the biggest guy in his own house. Probably a young man. Not a big man. Then he says, "Into his hand hath God," capital G, so it means that he used the Israel God, "delivered Midian and all the host." Midian, the Amalekites, the children of the east, all of us are going to die at his hand. The most powerful army in the whole entire region is already defeated by a man who's never been in battle. How is that? That is God's intervention. I'm going to tell you something. The psychological side of warfare is the most powerful side of warfare. My uncle got into paintball games back in the 80s when paintball guns first came out. And he and his high school friend, they were just out of high school, they went to Missouri and competed in the Tri-State Paintball Championships. And they beat like 138 teams. And I'm like, "Y'all have special guns?" And they're like, "No, everybody else had these real fancy guns. We just weren't afraid of getting shot. Everybody else would duck down and shoot over the top of a limb, and they'd just run at them and aim and shoot and aim and shoot." And he said, "You know, paintballs would be whizzing by." He said, "But if you weren't afraid of getting hit by a paintball, you won." Why? You had the confidence. When you go into combat, if people are afraid and they're timid and they're hunkered down, and they know they're already defeated, they know they're outnumbered, they do not put up a resistance. These Midianites are already mentally defeated. It's not going to take but somebody to go bang, and they're all going to run off. I think if Gideon said, "You're talking about me," they would have, "Hands up, don't shoot." They would have walked and turned themselves in. I'm serious. They're that scared. And Gideon's done absolutely nothing to deserve this reputation except be picked by God for the position. That brings us to verse 15. Gideon's insistence. "And it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel and said, 'Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian.'" I want to emphasize something in what he said. He's now talking like God's talking. God said, "I have already given you Midian." If you don't believe me, you go down and listen to what they're saying. He went down and the Midianites said, "God has already delivered us into the hands of Gideon." Now Gideon goes back up and he starts talking in the past tense. "God hath already given us Midian." You know what faith is? It's the evidence of things not seen. Nobody had seen Gideon beat the Midianites. Next week, Gideon's going to tell a group of people, give me something to eat and drink. I'm chasing my enemy. Is your enemy with you? Have you caught him already? Well, if you hadn't caught him, we're not going to give him to you. Gideon's going to come back with his enemy and say, God already gave him to me. But since you didn't help me along the way, you're going to pay. That's the difference between faith and sight. All right. He comes back. There's a lot of insistence here in verse 15. Gideon, when he heard the dream and the interpretation, he insisted on worship. Why didn't it just say he praised God all the way back to the camp? It didn't. He didn't praise God all the way back. It appears to me that he stopped, bowed down, worshiped God, had a time of prayer and thanksgiving, and offered true worship to God, and then said, all right, now that I've worshiped God, I have an insistence on returning to the host of Israel. Right now, I've got to get back to the 299 men because Purah's with him. Me and Purah have to get back to the 299 men. Then he insists that they get up right now, and then he insists that God has already given them victory. All of this by hearing two Midianites talk. It's almost as if he had the exact effect that God said he would. It's almost like God calls the shots before he shoots. It's almost like God orchestrates the events of world history according to his purpose. Okay, brings us to point number three, routing the adversaries. Any questions about God choosing to reassure them? God's method of doing this? Sending one guy a dream and another guy telling him what the dream meant, all in the presence of Midian, all in the presence of Gideon? Routing their adversaries. You look at verse 16 through 25. It's a long passage. Let's just read 16 through 20 and look at Gideon's plan. It says, and he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. Now, the lamps would be firebrands or torches. King James translates it lamp. You think of lamp, you may think of coal miner's lamp, coal oil lamp. Wasn't that? You may think of a magic lamp with a genie in it. Wasn't that? It was a torch on the end of a stick. And that was inside a pot. Okay? Now, if you want to know what that looks like, if you light your torch, it doesn't give out a lot of light, but the light it gives is in 360 degrees. If you light your torch and you put it inside a pot like this, the light only shines out at the bottom where you walk. A torch in a pot would not be visible in the back where Rendell's at, but I could see the ground where I was walking at. Pretty ingenious, isn't it? Now, if a man's got a trumpet, we got 300 trumpets, we got 300 pots, we got 300 torches. Verse 17. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so do you. So Gideon's going to be the commander of the army. They're going to split up in three groups, and everybody's going to do what Gideon does. He's going to tell them, when I blow with a trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came into the outside of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, and they that had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers with their hands, and the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers that held the lamps in their left hand, and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal, and they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Plan is, Gideon and his 100 men are going to break their pitchers first, show their torches first, blow their trumpets first. So if you're asleep, well, when's the third, second watch of the night? The middle watch. It's three watches. I think the middle watch is like 10 to 2. So this would be 10 p.m. This is when the guards would change out. You'd have one group that'd go 6 to 10 because the night started at 6. You'd have one that went 10 to 2, and you'd have one that went 2 to 8. So the middle guards just got on duty. The guys that were scared about the dream, they just got off guard duty. So Gideon and his 100 men blow their trumpet at 10 o'clock at night. everybody in the camp of Midian, wake up. This is a big camp. Keep in mind, this is not like a Boy Scout camp. There's 150,000 men and their livestock and their tents and everything they need to eat. We're talking about the Army of Northern Virginia early in the Civil War. If you've ever looked at a picture of that, 150,000 men, I use that reference because those men traveled on horseback with wagons. They slept under tents. They had to build fires. They had to bring cattle and chickens and hogs to eat because they couldn't travel with an MRE or a can of pork and beans. So when you look at the Army of Northern Virginia in the Civil War, if you look at a map, you're going to see a camp that would take up maybe 6 or 7 miles long along a river. You'd have Jeb Stuart here, and you'd have Stonewall Jackson here, and you'd have some other general here, and you just go down this list, and they would be scattered out. And that's the way the camp of Midian would be. We tend to think they're like sneaking around a little scout camp, and they're roasting weenies over a fire. It's not like that. It's like the entire city of Fort Smith and all of the surrounding cities are camping in tents. That's how big it is. So when this first trumpet blows, everybody on that end of the camp is going to sit straight up in bed and go, "What was that?" And the people in the middle are going to go, "Did you hear something?" And then in the middle of the camp, there's going to be another 100 men throw a pitcher down the side of the mountain. Now, if you've ever heard pottery break on rocks, you know how loud that is. 100 of them. And I don't mean 100 Scentsy pots, ladies. I mean 100 clay pots big enough to stick a torch in and keep it lit while you walk. Pots like we have out here in the flower bed by the sign. Pots that big. 100 of them are going to be tossed down the mountain on the rocks, shattering into pieces. And then you're going to hear a 100 ram horn sound off. And people in the middle part of the camp are going to jump up and go, "What is that?" And then people at the far end are going to go, "Did you hear something?" And another 100 pots break. And another 100 trumpets break. And then you're going to hear this in unison. The sword of the Lord and Gideon. Now I wonder where Gideon come up with the idea of saying that. Well, evidently he has the reputation of being a sword wielder, remember? He's the regular Zorro of Manasseh. So Gideon says, "We want them to know that we're fighting for God, the sword of the Lord, but I'm the one that God has put in their mind as being the terror, the sword of the Lord and Gideon." That's the plan. That's his plan. This is what they're going into battle. So they need to be able to drink on their feet, sipping to their mouth with their hands so they can look around. Do they even need a sword? No. There's no evidence that they have one. Well, they got one. They got the sword of the Lord. Now, why does he say the sword of the Lord and Gideon? Here's the lesson right here. The sword of the Lord is God's part. Gideon is man's part. Salvation requires God and man to work together. You can't have it all God, and you can't have it all man. God is God, and he chooses to use man. God is God, and he chooses to save man. So we have divine sovereignty and human responsibility side by side in harmony. But here's what you need to know. The human responsibility side has never trumped the God sovereignty side. If it were not for a sovereign God showing up at the oak tree of Ophrah, if it were not for a sovereign God who preserved him after he tore down the idols of Baal and Asherah, if it were not for a sovereign God that assembled 32,000 people and whittled them down to 300, if it were not for a sovereign God that struck terror in the hearts of the Midianites, if it were not for a sovereign God who hadn't put it within the hearts of these 300 men to fight, none of the Gideon part would even be available. But if it was all God and no Gideon, we wouldn't have a story either. Man is responsible. God is sovereign. Without God's sovereignty, working first on man's responsibility, man will never act. That's the Old Testament text of a New Testament salvation. You want to know why? Because God saved the same way in the Old Testament as he did in the New Testament. God's part. That's what they did. It's genius. It wasn't Gideon's idea. It was Gideon's plan, God's idea. Here's what God did, verse 21 and 22. We take all that time to tell you what Gideon did. We take two verses to tell you what God did. And they stood up every man in his place around about the camp, and all the hosts ran and cried and fled in the dark without a flashlight. Verse 22. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host, and the host fled to Beth Sittim and Zereth and the borders of Abimelech unto Tabeth. Notice that God turned them to fight each other. Now, if you've ever watched an old Western movie or an old war movie, when they're fleeing, somebody's trying to get on their horse and another guy runs up and shoots them, and then he gets on the horse. Somebody's trying to saddle up their camel and another guy runs out and knifes him, and he's got a camel. And these people are killing each other trying to get away from Gideon and 300 men with torches and trumpets. That's all they got. And so they're killing each other. It's dark. They can't see each other. They didn't wear uniforms. We don't know who's who in the dark. But if you're running and I'm running and you think that Israel is all over the camp, you start stabbing people. And in an army of 150,000, how many of you know who's who? God is orchestrating all of this so that they're killing each other. And what's Israel doing? They're just standing there blowing them trumpets. You know, if somebody would stop for just a moment and look around and go, they ain't come down off that mountain. They're just up there. They're not attacking us. Why didn't somebody do that? Why didn't somebody use their wisdom? Because they were all under the divine control of God. Every single one of them. That's God's part. Now let's get to verse 23 through 25. And let's see Gideon now become the leader. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and out of Asher. And out of all of Manasseh, and pursued after the Midianites. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and take them before the waters of Bethbara and Jordan. And the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters of Bethbara and Jordan. Now, everybody that's in the area, is all the surrounding towns where these 32,000 men all went back to, are all seeing the Midianites fleeing. So they're joining in the race with Gideon. And Gideon says somebody needs to go around them and go tell the Ephraimites who live along the Jordan River to block off the Jordan River so that they don't get on the other side. So the tribe of Ephraim comes down and sets up a defense on the river. So about daylight, the Midianites are now trapped by Ephraim. And Ephraim is a pretty good sized tribe. But the Midianites are no longer 150,000. It's just now the leaders and the officers that have made it this far. The guys with fast horses, the guys with camels, the guys that your average private don't knife in the back. So look what happens. The Ephraimites took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb, and slew Oreb upon the rock of Oreb, and Zeb they slew at the winepress of Zeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. This wasn't Oreb's rock until Oreb died there. Or Oreb. Oreb, I think, is the right way to say it. Zeb, this wasn't his wine press. They named the wine press and they named the rock after the people were killed. He's giving the name of the rock and the name of the wine press because at the writing of the book of Judges, it was still called the rock of Zeb and the wine press of Zeb and the rock of Oreb. That's why they were named such. So here's what we know. Gideon starts out as a rebel leader with a small band that God whittles down to 300. Then towards the end, he's directing entire tribes and calling out other tribes to help him. And people are all naturally following Gideon, who is called Jerubbaal, saying, Baal will get you. Well, let me tell you something. If you go into battle and the odds are 301 to 150,000 and Baal still don't get you, and you win, Baal ain't no God at all. But from this point on, Gideon is going to establish himself as commander. Not as a military commander, as chief. The Ephraimites are going to take questions. Why didn't you invite us to the fight? He's going to diplomatically deal with them. Then he's going to pursue his enemies. Then he's going to crush those who did not help him. And he's going to establish himself as the judge of Israel in chapter 8. Is there any questions about what we've looked at in this text? Everybody understand how the battle went? Everybody understand the lessons, the practical lessons you can learn from how God does these battles and controls these people? It's almost like Paul said, if God be for us, who can be against us? Any questions?